This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm Phil Kirkbride, and today joined by Dave Prentice, Adam Jones and Sam Carroll as we chew the fat over all the major talking points at Goodison Park. And the big news, the most significant news of the day, earlier this afternoon, the football club confirming that Leighton Baines has been offered a new deal. It was fully expected, of course, but officially that offer has gone into Leighton Baines for an extension. So we will get the chaps' views on that and the prospect of another 12 months of the long-serving club player. We'll also discuss Yerry Mina's injury, another injury to come out of the return to training after Jean-Philippe Gabaman. Now Yerry Mina, so disappointing news, and I'll get the chaps' opinions and views on where Everton go and if the defence can cope for the remaining nine games, if he is to be out for that long, but we wait and see the extent of his injury. And the third and final part of the podcast will be mainly over to Preno, but we'll come to that later and explain all later in the podcast. Preno, we'll start with you. No great surprise, but formally the football club have made an offer for an extra season for Leighton Baines. Good news, isn't it?
It's excellent news, yeah. I'm delighted for the lad. I'm delighted for the football club. Baines is arguably the most iconic individual at the football club at the moment. But you don't get new contracts just for being a popular lad and for being iconic and for being, you know, somebody that's served well for however many years it may be. You get a new contract because you're useful to the football club going forward. And Baines, he clearly is on and off the pitch. I mean, obviously, Lucas Digne's, the consistency of his performances since he arrived means that Baines's opportunities have been limited, but he hasn't let that affect him. He's kept himself fit and sharp. And when he has come in and played, he's looked absolutely magnificent. I mean, he probably scored the goal of the season last season. So, of this season. How do we say? Is it this season? Is it last season?
Yes, this season.
still happening, Brent.
Yeah, but it seems weird to be talking about this season in June, but there you go. But yeah, for me, you know, so probably goal of the season still. But he proves that, you know, so he can still contribute, you know, whenever he's called upon. And then there's also the influence that he has in the dressing room. He's clearly a very respected individual. His work ethic on the training pitch is something to be admired. A lot of players look up to him, keeps himself in great nick, you know, so physically and mentally. So, yeah, you know, ticks every single box. So, yeah, it's no great surprise to see him offered a new deal because he deserves one. But I'm pleased that it has now been rubber stamped.
Adam, I think everybody assumes that he will sign it. He'll sign it, won't he? There'll be no concerns about that.
He's got to, hasn't he? I think that would be one of the most depressing things to happen in a long time if he ends up turning down that offer of a new contract. Because, you know, I've got to fully agree with what Preno said there. I think Baines has fully deserved this contract. You know, over previous times we might have had some players staying on at the club that little bit too long, and it was down to perhaps loyalty or because we were short in a position, etc. It's not the case with Baines at all. Like, he has fully deserved another year because of how well he has performed this season, especially when he's had to fill in for Lucas Digne. Like that Manchester United performance at home in particular, that was, yeah, I've said it a few times on this podcast, you know, that was a real throwback to the Leighton Baines that we were used to over the last few years, you know, just marauding down that left-hand side. And, you know, he was a real thorn in the side of Manchester United that day. And, you know, to have a backup left-back with the quality of Leighton Baines is just incredible for Everton to be able to have, really. You know, if, let's say, Baines did, God forbid, turn down this contract, he'd walk into half of the teams in the league. He'd walk straight into their starting 11s. He's still that good at the age of 35. You know, this is probably, he's a cult hero, certainly, at Everton. He's probably the closest thing to a legend that a lot of a certain generation of Everton supporters have had. So, you know, to be able to have, you know, as we expect, another year of him at the club would be brilliant. So, yeah, it's great news.
Sam, what does it say about Baines's ability, professionalism, and more importantly, his impact, that Carlo Ancelotti, you know, who will have had to have given the sign-off for this offer, this contract offer to be made, has said, yeah, I want another 12 months of Leighton Baines as I build this you know, this new Everton future, hopefully.
I think the thing that's always struck me, especially, is that, you know, even Manchester United away, I think it was this season when Dean pulled up injured, you know, and you think about what an impact Lucas Dean's had on this team since he joined. When you see Baines warming up to get ready, you're never like, oh, crap, like, it's Baines coming on. Yeah, you know, it's just, he comes on, he just makes the similar impact, you know what I mean? And just been so consistent. And I think, really, the only thing is just how good Dean's been, because I still think Baines would probably walk into any club outside maybe the top six in the Premier League. Still, he is still that good. And obviously, you know, that's something that I think it was pretty early on, wasn't it, in Carlo Ancelotti's tenure, that even did he speak to the club website about how he wanted to,
yeah,
how much he loved Baines, and it seemed a very kind of it was very kind of a calculated move, wasn't it? I think everybody knows that Leighton Baines is so valuable to Everton now in the role that he plays, because, you know, he's not going to rock the boat, and, you know, he's not going to be the kind of person who messes around or anything like that. He just gets the job done, and, you know, it's just hopefully now that he signs, and he doesn't think, maybe, look, I could probably go and see out my career maybe in America or something like that, because 90% of teams in the world at the moment he'd play for. So that'd be my only concern.
Preno, I was going to ask that question. Adam and Sam have sort of half answered it. How many teams in the Premier League, how many of the 20 teams in the Premier League, of the 19 other Premier League teams, would Bainesy command first choice left back?
To be honest, I'm quite interested in finding out who Sam thinks crappy is coming on. Actually, plays in the Everton squad at the moment. But we won't ask him to name names. That could put him in quite a precarious situation. If you were to go through the squad, go through the Premier League, you know, club by club, there'd only be probably, you know, the handful of the, you know, the elite, you know, so top four or five, where you could say that, yes, there's probably a player there who's, you know, sort of got a similar quality to Leighton Baines. I won't say, you know, sort of greater quality. It's only a few years ago that Baines was being named in the PFA Premier League Team of the Year consistently. Obviously, he's not been in recent years because we haven't been seeing that much of him. And at his age, you know, so clearly he's not going to be able to command, you know, sort of a place for an entire season. But the quality is still there, you know, so even if the enduring, you know, sort of freedom from fitness, freedom from injury, you know, sort of maybe isn't. So to answer the question, probably only the top echelon, the very, very top echelon. And to suggest that he's a backup effectively as well, you know, so he's a number two left back. It just underlines, you know, so how gifted Everton are in that area. It's Sod's law, really, isn't it? That, you know, we've got two very, very, very good left backs, and yet in other areas of the defence, you know, we're scrambling around for numbers at the moment. But that's just, you know, some modern football, unfortunately. But I think all Evertonians have got a huge degree of time for Leighton Baines, just because of what he brings to the football club in terms of his personality. I mean, obviously, I've been watching Everton play for a lot longer than you guys have, but I still don't think I've seen a better left back in all that time. Andy Hinchcliffe, you know, was an England international, you know, so regular for a couple of seasons in the mid-90s. But Baines, I think even Andy would admit himself, Baines has probably got a bit more quality in all areas of the pitch. Mick Pedgick was another one in the 70s. He was an England international. Baines, I think, is a better player than him. You've got to go back to the days of Ray Wilson, who I didn't see play, before you've maybe got somebody that, you know, so is on a similar quality. So that just underlines how, you know, how gifted Everton are, you know, so in that particular area of the pitch. And the fact that he's such a good lad as well, the fact he's so good to have around the training ground, you know, all the more reason why Everton have offered the deal. And we are just presupposing he is going to sign us, and we'd be all very surprised if he decided to go elsewhere. It's a very, very good story in a week when we needed a bit of a lift, to be honest, you know, so in news elsewhere.
Well, Adam, I think one of you briefly touched on it earlier on. The fact that Leighton is so good, and we believe, and I think we're all in agreement, that he would walk into the majority of Premier League teams and be a first-choice left-back, that actually just re-emphasises, despite a season where he was perhaps not quite at the levels of his first season, but it re-emphasises how good Lucas Dean has actually been.
Oh, yeah, I think it's something that we were talking about a lot last season, wasn't it? You know, the task of being able to step up and step into Leighton Baines' shoes was never going to be an easy one for any player. And with the consummate ease, almost, that Lucas Dean managed to do it, even at periods of last season when Everton weren't performing very well, Lucas Digne was still performing extremely well. And, you know, it's no surprise that he was named as Players Player of the Season and Fans Player of the Season in the Dixies last season. You know, that kind of emphasises just how crucial he was to the side. And he still is so crucial to the side as well. You know, he's still chipping in with all these assists. You know, he's still affecting games at both ends of the pitch. And, you know, it does kind of hark back to what always made Baines so special, you know, that kind of quality, you know, crossing delivery from the left flank, you know, set pieces, long-range goals, as he came up with last season as well. You know, it's almost as if he's in the same kind of mould as Leighton Baines. So it was even more impressive that he could just easily step into those shoes and, you know, take that position up into the next level. So, yeah, I think it does just summarise just how good Lucas Digne has been. And, you know, to be able to consist, you know, we've spoken about how much quality Leighton Baines still has. You know, he's shown us how much quality he still has. So for Digne to be able to keep Baines on the bench, essentially, you know, they are just still competing for that position. You know, Baines isn't going to want to be settling for just being a backup. He's going to want to challenge for the first team, obviously. So the fact that Digne is managing to keep him on the bench, you know, it does just show how important he is to this side, definitely.
So, and I know we've discussed this on this podcast a number of times, but how many clubs in the Premier League have got better options at left back? You know, which clubs have got greater strength in depth in that position than we have?
I think if you're talking greater strength in depth, what teams have three better left backs than Baines, Digne and Cuco Martina, isn't it? So really got to kind of think about Nah, in terms of Baines and Digne, it's just, I honestly don't, you know, I do think, obviously, Andy Robertson is a good fullback. I think, you know, City have got a couple, I think even City, I'd probably think Digne over Mendy, actually. So I would honestly say, in terms of the two we've got, we could actually be the best up there, because I just don't think if any of the teams left back get injured, they have a Leighton Baines coming in. You know, you see most teams, you know, putting players, you know, I think City were, until the last couple of seasons, were obviously putting Delph in at left-back, and in Liverpool, they put Milner in at left-back, so...
Hey, well, you know, well, we've got Delph now, so there's another one.
Yeah. So, I would say for actual strength and depth, definitely up there, and then I think in terms of Digne on his day, you know, I think all Everton fans would probably agree this season maybe wasn't as good as last season, but still, to his credit, has still been fantastic, really. I'd say, I think maybe a couple of times this season, there's a few performances, maybe defensively, where he wasn't as solid as he had been the season before. But on his day, I think he is up there with the best two or three left-backs in the entire Premier League. And as you were saying, it is testament to him. But it's also a kind of thing of, you know, for Baines to sign this new contract, he hasn't even really been getting cup games or anything the last couple of seasons, has he? So it'd be interesting to kind of see if he's saying to Ancelotti, well, if I sign this, you know, I at least want to be playing a few games, because as you said, Evertonians respect him, and I don't think any Evertonian would begrudge seeing him on the starting lineup for a few Carabao Cup or FA Cup matches.
Indeed. So from a position of real strength in depth to one where we are light, and we were light at the start of the season after the window closed, but we thought we'd got away with it in some respects with only having three centre-halves. The news this week that Yerry Mina has suffered a partial tear of his left quad and will be out for, inverted commas, an undefined period of time, several weeks. We don't know exactly yet how long. Can we cope potentially going into the restart of the season, the resumption of the season on June the 20th, with just two senior centre-halves?
We'll have to. It's as simple as that. It's enormously frustrating, because everybody foresaw this position right at the start of the season. I know Everton were trying to bring, you know, Marcus Rojo in from United, and they walked away from that in the end, didn't they? That didn't quite come off. And when that didn't, everyone thought, are we going to be struggling here? Are we going to leave ourselves a little bit light? But we thought we'd got away with it. We thought we'd got through the season. And obviously, Holgate's performances since then as well have helped to make that problem go away a little bit, because he was arguably, you know, so much better than many people expected him to be. So we thought, great, okay, you know, so the problem's gone away now. And if something like this happens when we haven't played football for 12 weeks, to actually sustain an injury, which is going to keep him out for a few weeks at least, it's a worry. I mean, Michael Keane wasn't, well, he played the last couple of games, didn't he, before the lockdown, but, you know, he'd argue being overlooked in favour of Meunier and Holgate, which appeared to be Ancelotti's preferred partnership. He's going to have to form a new partnership now with Holgate. And if anything happens to either of them, you know, we are really down to the bare bones. And, you know, I saw a piece today suggesting that Morgan Schneiderlin is being considered as maybe, you know, sort of an auxiliary, you know, sort of centre-half option. Otherwise, you're looking at kids, you're looking at youngsters that have not played any, you know, sort of senior Premier League football. It's a bit weird at the moment. I mean, when we do return to Premier League football, clearly the quality is still going to be exactly the same. You know, so starting against Liverpool, it'll be absolutely, you know, sort of ready and flying. It's going to be tough. But the fact that there's going to be no crowd in the stadium, will that make it a little bit easier, in inverted commas, for a younger player to assimilate, just take one little bit of pressure off him, having to handle it with that? I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's just, you know, if worse comes to worse, though. But for the time being, you know, we are looking good. You know, so Michael Keane and Mason Holgate, both very good players. They're both going to have to form a partnership, and they're going to have to perform well, because it looks like it could be a few weeks that, you know, so we'll be missing Yerry Mina. So it's a frustration, but, you know, these are the things that Carlo Ancelotti has to overcome. And this is something else he's going to have to exercise his grey matter over. It's a concern, but, yeah, I think we can get over it, yeah.
Adam, just picking up on a piece you wrote in the wake of the Mina news, you know, that need to find a fourth centre-half never went away. And the news this week only reinforced the priority, you know, where that sits on the list of priorities for Everton this summer, albeit in this crazy new look transfer market that we all expect. It's still an area that has to be addressed.
Oh, yeah. We were so close. We were so close. We actually lasted until June. Like, at the start of the season, if you'd have said, we'll last until June with only three centre-halves, we'll go, oh, yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. Little did we know the season would still have nine games left at this point. So, yeah, it is, as Preno says, it's really frustrating, and it does just highlight what, you know, can only really go down as a failure as the last in the last transfer window. You know, we put a lot of eggs, it's seemingly, into the Kurt Zouma basket, and then whenever that wasn't a possibility, you know, other targets were explored, and, you know, they just didn't come off. And then we come to January, and January is always a tough market to try and work in. So you can't really look at that one as a failure, in my opinion. So yeah, it does just highlight what is going to be, you know, such a weird summer transfer window already. You know, we've already highlighted that previously that we are in dire need of another centre back, and, you know, talks have progressed with Gabriel at Lille before this lockdown, and, you know, it's, you just don't know what's going to happen with those negotiations now. Obviously, they're going to be completely different over the next few weeks, months, you know, whenever the transfer window opens. So it does just make things 10 times harder. And as Preno says now, if, you know, Holgate or Keane were, heaven forbid, to pick up an injury of their own now, we're looking at, you know, if we can get special dispensation perhaps for Lewis Gibson, if he wasn't to stay out on loan at Fleetwood, then maybe he'd step in. Or beyond that, you're looking at Jadon Branthwaite, who, you know, he's 17-year-old who joined in January. And, you know, he started off solidly enough for the under-23s, but there was still an obvious step up that he needed to make it, like, onto the level of the under-23s, let alone to be, you know, called first team. You know, he's been training with the first team, but, you know, it's so different to be potentially called up to the first team bench. So yeah, it is just going to highlight how much we need four senior options next season. So this summer is crucial, really.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Sam, I'm going to put you in the Everton dugout. You are in this make-believe situation, Everton manager. It's the derby.
I'm not Mina's sure that's still why.
Mina's still injured, so he wasn't included in the squad. Michael Keane and Mason Holgate start as expected, but Keane goes down injured. How do you shuffle the pack?
Can I not go rogue and kit up now?
No, that's in the Premier League handbook. That's not allowed.
And we've seen the play style now.
Jesus.
What about that suggestion about Schneidlin that Preno mentioned? Does he drop in, or do you trust Jared Branthwaite? Is he on the bench even, or as a third option, as an extra body, do the club have to look at a temporary extension for Kuko Martina as a defender to keep him around? I don't know.
It's honestly so. It genuinely doesn't bear thinking. I'm thinking in that scenario, you probably would have to put Schneidl in there. I think just maybe it'd be some baptism of fire for Branthwaite, wouldn't it? To say,
yeah, yeah.
It's up against, you know, the probable
salary money. Yeah,
yeah. That would be difficult. Obviously, you couldn't do Baines there. Could Sidibe play centre back? I suppose.
Possibly. The cruel irony of all of this, of course, is that Jean-Philippe Gabaman had played centre half earlier in his career and was, when he signed, was mentioned as possibly being able, as somebody who could have filled in that position.
Yeah, well, so I think you're probably looking at a toss up between Sidibe, between Schneidlin, or unless, you know, Branthwaite has been kind of blowing people's socks off in training. So it's a difficult one, isn't it? And one that you've just, as Adam just said, it's almost kind of a little bit dark comedy of how we lasted with kind of limited options until this kind of unprecedented extra little third of the season. So it is just so hard, and I think that will be the main thing in that Goodison derby, won't it, for Keane and Holgate to stay fit. And it's probably not the most ideal partnership either. I think you would have probably wanted to see Holgate and Mina, but what an unexpected chance for Michael Keane as well.
Absolutely. Preno, look, and every team, you know, in our frustrations and cursing of luck, we always have to remember that every squad and every team, every season gets injuries. But it does feel like Everton's luck has been, you know, downright rotten this season. I mean, it's bizarre, the number of injuries and what feels like, you know, really ill-timed as well.
It has, yeah. I mean, I've had a few texts and a few, you know, moans from friends and, you know, people, you know, follow the club, suggesting that there's some kind of issue on the training pitch. You know, so, yeah, we're actually not, you know, looking after the players as well as we should do, which I totally dismiss. It's absolute nonsense argument that. I mean, obviously, the Andre Gomez one was a complete freak. And to underline, you know, so how unlucky Everton have been, the Gabamin issue, I mean, the lad had recovered one, you know, so really, really serious injury. It was, you know, had finished his training session for the day and was just, you know, playing a game of head tennis. He was just like, you know, so kicking a ball around on the pitch when his Achilles went. You know, you can't legislate for things like that. And for it to happen, you know, in a position where, you know, we'd already lost players this season, is also, like you say, a player that can also, you know, so play in a position in which we would need cover at the moment. Just underlines how unfortunate we've been. I mean, it's really tough news for Mina, but I mean, Gabamin, I really do feel so, so sorry for. I mean, I'm sure you've covered it, you know, so in podcast recently. But, you know, to have the severity of the injury that he's sustained, one on top of the other, after 135 minutes of football, I'm struggling really to think of anybody else that, you know, so has had such awful luck with injuries at the football club. You're going all the way back to, you know, the 1970s. David Smallman's a player I mention every now and then, who, you know, so had great potential and just got his career wrecked entirely by injury. That won't be the case with Gabamin. I'm confident he will come back, you know, so eventually. But, you know, it's going to be a very, very, you know, slow start for him when he does. So, yeah, it has. It's just been misfortune. And you can only hope that these things level themselves out a little bit. You know, we've had a little bit of a dodgy run with injuries. Hopefully that means that, you know, it's going to improve over the next year, 2 years, and we're going to have a little bit of freedom from injury. So I genuinely don't think it's anything to do with the way the other players are being looked after on the training pitches. It is just, as you say, pure and simple misfortune. I mean, the sports scientists at the football club monitor the players, you know, so muscularity, you know, so when they can actually predict when players are more likely to, you know, sustain certain types of injuries. And the fact that, you know, so these injuries are still being sustained has nothing to do with that. It is just misfortune. So, yeah, you know, so stop with these, you know, walking under ladders or kicking black cats or whatever it is that we've been doing recently.
Well, I think playing for Everton's midfield has to come with a health warning, because I revisited a piece I'd written just before the suspension, and factoring in the fact that Gbamin will miss the final nine games, any Everton senior midfielder, Everton senior midfielders combined, will have missed, by the time the season is finished, in the region of 60 league games.
That's staggering. And to be fair, sometimes you can look at players and you can sort of predict that that might happen. I mean, you can look at Fabian Delph and the injury record he's had, and you can say, well, it's a bit of a gamble buying a player like that because his injury record has been mixed over the years. So, you know, that is a contributory factor, but not with Gbamin. You know, so Gbamin's appearance record had been excellent, you know, so which is why one of the reasons Everton paid the money they did for him. So, sometimes you just can't legislate for certain injuries. Sometimes you are just suffering from bad luck, and Everton are, and I've got to overcome it.
Just sticking with the midfield briefly, as we're talking about it, it appears that Mo Besic will not be extending his loan at Sheffield United to
Is he still an Everton player?
You are not the first person who's asked that question to me today, Preno. Yes, wow. He has 12 months left on his deal. They were in talks with Sheffield United to extend the loan to cover the resumption of the Premier League season, but for some reason, not has yet to become clear, that won't be happening. And Adam, he will be, well, supposedly, in inverted commas, returning to Everton. Bizarre. I just can't get my head around why that deal hasn't been agreed there.
Yeah, we were discussing this yesterday, weren't we? It just seems like a bit of a mad decision to me because, you know, granted he might not have been getting all the game time that he might have wanted at Sheffield United, but, you know, with the way that the Premier League's returning, we're playing nine Premier League games in quick succession when the league comes back. Sheffield United are still in the FA Cup as well, so they'll have more fixtures on top of that. You can only presume that game time would have come Besic's way. Like,
talk about five subs as well, but that might happen.
Exactly, yeah. It's certainly more than the 0 minutes that he's gonna get by returning to Everton. So I just can't fathom why he wouldn't want to stay there and at least play a little bit of football for the end of the season, even if, you know, even if there was no prospect of him staying there for beyond the end of this season. But it just seems absolutely mad that, you know, Sheffield United was clearly quite keen to keep him on. You know, he's, from what I've heard about his time there, you know, he's put in a few good performances for them at least. So just don't know why he wouldn't want to stay there and show off what he can do ahead of the summer, where you presume it's going to be another move is going to be on the cards. Like, so it's just absolutely bizarre to me because, as I say, he's not going to get anything by coming back here.
Now, some players, I mean, the Championship's a strange league this year. I mean, I read a piece the other day about a number of players that don't want to play, you know, so at the end of the season because their contract has expired in June and they are worried about picking up an injury which would prevent them getting a new contract elsewhere. You know, I think Charlton have got a striker who's like top scorer this season who doesn't want to play for them, you know, so in the last 9 or 10 games of the season, which is going to affect their chances of staying up. But Mo Besic isn't in that boat, as you say, Phil. He's got a year left on his contract, which staggers me, to be honest. I didn't realise he still had that long left. So, you know, why wouldn't he want to stay and run, you know, the opportunity of at least trying to get some game time? It is a very, very curious one, unless he's had a sniff of, you know, some maybe interest from elsewhere and he thinks that he could be getting a move, you know, sort of somebody else, and he's worried about jeopardising that by picking up an injury, playing in a match elsewhere. Only Mo can tell us the answer to that one, I'm afraid.
Indeed. Sam, why did the promise of Besic's, you know, having looked like he had the potential to become a bit of a cult hero, why do you think it's not transpired like that at Everton, and why has it not worked out?
I think it might almost be, I think Barkley struggled with something similar, but I think he's got all the attributes, but sometimes I think maybe his football intelligence lets him down a little bit. I thought too often he kind of made the wrong decision, the wrong pass. It was almost like
back heels on his debut, stuff like that.
You know, a little bit. And, you know, in a weird way, I thought he actually bounced back from that. You know, doing that when you first come on, when your first touch in Everton shirt could have been the end. But even after that, he did have some promising performances. I think City in the League Cup, he was
a
bit good, weren't he? And I did like him. But then whenever he seemingly got a little bit of a chance, a little bit, you know, go on, kick on now and show what you can do. There was just too many decisions when he was on the ball that just didn't, just were poor. And I think you know, a central midfielder in the Premier League. You know, sometimes I know people can have a bit of a go at Gomez because, you know, he doesn't always register the most glamorous assists and goals tally, but he quite often makes the right decisions and I think, you know, does the right thing in that way. Whereas Besic, he can pass, he can tackle, he can run, he's aggressive. You know, he's got everything that you'd want in an Everton centre mid. He was almost like a bit of a Thomas Gravesen kind of throwback, but he just didn't, for me, just really lacks that football intelligence, and it's disappointing to see that he hasn't kind of put money or whatever it's been aside to carry on at Sheffield United, because, you know, they're flying, and who probably wouldn't want to be a part of that? So I think that's another black mark on his record for me as well.
Okay, final part of today's podcast, as promised, is devoted to Preno, and I'm sure you've maybe heard a few things elsewhere, but Preno, you're in the middle of writing a book.
Not so much in the middle. I'm very, very close to the conclusion. So it's an idea I've had for a long, long time, because I've been doing the job I've been doing for a long, long time, as I'm sure you all know. First match I covered was for the Daily Post way back in 1987, which was the last match of the title-winning season. I was down to do quotes for the last game of the season against Spurs. And I remember chasing David Pleat down a tunnel to ask him why he played a weakened side, got the cup final only 5 or 6 days later. So I started in an era when football journalism was very, very different to how it is now. Clearly, it was pre-internet era. And the ability to gain access to football clubs was very different then. Certainly in the 90s, you know, I was down at the training ground every single morning, every single afternoon. I'd be invited into the manager's office every day for a cup of tea and a bit of toast. And I would travel on pre-season tours with the players. And, you know, clearly as the media demands on Premier League football have increased, you know, since that era, that's become more and more difficult to do so. But it means that I've built up a real fund of anecdotes and stories and, you know, so a little behind the scenes stuff, which I think are quite entertaining. I wrote a book a long, long time ago, which was effectively just a collection of reports from the Echo, Backpage Blues, and a bit crap, to be honest. It was just, like I say, a collection of reports that you've read before. And I remember, you know, when Skies of Grey reviewing it and actually saying, yeah, you know, so it's great, but we'd rather hear the stories behind the stories. So this is effectively what that is. It's how I've come across the stories that I've written for the Echo, some of the relationships I've built up during the years with managers, with players, and hopefully with lots of light-hearted, entertaining anecdotes along the way. I approached the publishing arm of the Echo at the start of the year, you know, to see if they'd be interested in doing this, and they were. They were very enthusiastic. The idea initially was about, you know, sort of my career covering Tranmere, Everton, Liverpool. You know, when I was chief sports writer, I was covering Liverpool for some time. And they weren't quite as enthusiastic about that. They wanted just an Everton-angled book. Similar, if you like, to, you know, Brian Reid's book, who used to work with the Echo years ago, now works for the Mirror, 43 years with the same bird, which is effectively, you know, sort of his personal history following Liverpool. So this is my personal history following Everton. Goes right back to the year dot when I was a 10-year-old sitting on the crash barriers in the enclosure to... You know, so now, you know, so earlier this season, I was invited into the other boardroom on match days by Bill Kenwright. So it's been quite some journey along that way. The guys wanted 80,000 words producing by the end of July in order to be able to make the market for this Christmas. And I'm there. I've gone past the 80,000 word mark and I'm still adding bits and bobs to it. And I'm quite pleased with it. I think it reads quite well. And I think Evertonians will enjoy it. I hope they will anyway. So it's something I just wanted to do, you know, for myself as much as anything. But, you know, it's one of the few positives I can see, you can say, has come out of this this, you know, horrible, you know, sort of pandemic. And the extra time I've had working from home means I've been able to devote an hour or two a day to looking at that as well. So it's pretty much there. You know, I need to go through it again. I need to add a few bits to it. I need to take all the photographs I've got to the guys at the Echo and see which of the pictures they want to use. But yeah, I'm quite looking forward to seeing how people receive it and, you know, so what they make of some of the stories, because I did have some quite close contacts with a lot of the people at the football club now. I mean, Graham Stewart was a personal friend of mine, lived around the corner. He's now a club ambassador. David Unsworth, who obviously, you know, very, very highly thought of at the football club, again, was a near neighbour, go back a long way with Unsy. Some of the managers have had, you know, so a great rapport with. Some I've had not so good rapport with. But, you know, so that's all in there as well. I think most people come out of it quite well also. I've spoken to people at the football club and told them my plans, and they're, you know, sort of quite enthusiastic about it as well. But as you'd imagine, who comes out of it well, who comes out of it badly? I said, no need to worry. I said, you know, so anybody at the football club now, you know, so can rest, you know, so comfortably. Obviously, Mike Walker might raise an eyebrow.
That initial sentence was code for Mike Walker's getting slaughtered here.
Well, nothing you might not have already heard previously. But, you know, so obviously Peter Johnson, you know, so his tenure as chairman was, shall we say, checkered. And that's quite an interesting period, that, as well, because I still remember the day when I went over to Peter Johnson's house with Paul Joyce, who was working for the Evertonian at the time, now works for the Times. And we'd had a ground poll at the time with, you know, so Everton had polled their supporters to see whether they were interested in a ground move. And myself and Joycey had to go over to Peter Johnson's house to get the results of this ground poll. I knocked on the front door, and I genuinely thought it was his home help or something was answering the door, you know, so a young woman with a pinny on. So she invited us into the kitchen, poured us a glass of wine, and was sat there sipping away the wine. And she was looking at me, you know, a little bit strangely. I thought, am I slurping my wine here? Am I, you know, sort of misbehaving? Mm. Anyway, she suddenly looked at me. It's David Prentice, isn't it? The penny dropped. Lorraine Rogers, she was an old school friend of mine at Formby High School, and she was then Peter Johnson's partner. And Peter was absolutely horrified, you can imagine. You never could. Oh my God. So it was that led to a very, very curious relationship I had with the chairman and with Lorraine, because I certainly don't think it compromised anything I ever wrote about Peter Johnson. I was critical of him as anybody I've been at the football club, so much so that during the World Cup in France in 98, they invited me to meet with Peter after England had played Tunisia down in Marseille, to meet up and, in inverted commas, bury the hatchet. And that was how I ended up spending a night on his yacht moored off Saint-Tropez. Absolutely bizarre evening. And, you know, the idea being to, you know, so let bygones be bygones, you know, so try and see things from each other's point of view and make a fresh start. And we did, briefly. and then he sold Duncan Ferguson behind the manager's back. And so things, you know, so went from bad to worse. So, yeah, it was a really, you know, so strange time. And it's quite interesting as well to see how journalism has changed, you know, so since then, how social media has changed the landscape, how the job that, you know, so you guys do now is so much more difficult than the job that, you know, so I started off doing, you know, so way back in 30 odd years ago now. So, yeah, it's something I really enjoyed putting together. Hopefully people will find it entertaining. And the only sticking point really was a title. When I spoke to the guys at the Echo, or Trinity Sports Media, as was, you know, we thought, let's put together a working title. And I think Once a Blue was the working title, which was obviously the famous, you know, sort of logo that Wayne Rooney had emblazoned upon his T-shirt when he first came through. I wasn't entirely happy with it. And just a couple of weeks ago, I thought, grand old team to report. Yeah, I like that. That sort of fits in. Obviously, it's, you know, the anthem. It's the fact that, you know, so it has been a grand old team to report on, and it has changed quite significantly, you know, since I started to where we are now. So fingers crossed, you know, so the pandemic and the fact that, you know, a lot of the lads of the Echo have been working in lockdown isn't going to affect, you know, so plans for this going forward. So hopefully, you know, so early autumn, you'll be reading a lot more about this. People will be able to read excerpts from it and, you know, so decide whether they want to buy it or not. So fingers crossed, it'll be all systems go, you know, so for this autumn.
Brilliant. Sam's asked for a signed copy. Is that okay for him?
As long as he buys it, yeah, of course.
Hand-delivered. Yeah, okay. Hand-delivered.
Provided we're still back in the office by then. I mean, I've still got some photographs I'd like to use for the day.
Are they locked up, yeah?
I was treading the boards in an Everton pantomime, would you believe? Alongside Everton players, you know, so from the 1970s. Howard was in it. Kenneth Cope, who's a proper television star, or he was in the 1970s. Randall and Hopkirk, deceased, he appeared in. I trod the boards with Kenneth Cope. So, yeah, there's a few words on there. But, yeah, some of the photographs from that are in my drawer at work. So wow. When we're next allowed into the office, who knows? But I'd like to retrieve them sometime as well.
Well, we are very much looking forward to that, and hopefully that'll be out sometime in the autumn, as you say. So keep an eye out for that. Okay, so that brings us to an end today's podcast, chaps. Thank you very much for your company. Excellent, as always. And thank you for listening. This has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.